I'm Tracy Sable. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, prayers for a pope. The Holy Father spends another day in a Rome hospital. We have the latest on his condition. Speaking out, Vladimir Putin weighs in on Russia's role in Europe and where things stand on the war with Ukraine. Budget battle. House Republicans are taking steps to pass President Trump's agenda. We're on Capitol Hill. And a salute from the Vatican. New developments in the path to sainthood for a well-known military chaplain in the Korean War. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us. Our top story tonight, the Holy Father's condition remains critical but stable. This is the latest communication from the Vatican on Pope Francis's health. EWTN News correspondent Colin Flynn has more.
Good evening, Tracy. This is Pope Francis's 12th day in hospital and his condition remains critical. But we've just been told by the Vatican this evening that it is stable. The Vatican explained that the Pope had no more acute respiratory episodes after he had suffered one over the weekend, and that his blood levels continue to be stable. Remember, he had a blood transfusion on Saturday due to low levels of red blood cells. Now, the Vatican said that the Pope underwent a follow-up CT scan this evening to monitor his bilateral pneumonia. The results of that scan, though, were not included in this most recent statement. But again, they finished by saying that the Pope's prognosis is, quote, guarded. They added that this morning Pope Francis received the Eucharist and then he resumed some work activities. Well, last night it was Cardinal Pietro Parolin who started the Rosary Vigil in St. Peter's Square behind me, where an estimated 2,000 people prayed for the Pope's recovery. And tonight it was Filipino Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle who led that Rosary. And also earlier today, the Vatican published a message from Pope Francis which was wrote a number of weeks ago, and in it he invited everyone for this upcoming season of Lent to, quote, journey together in hope and to take this opportunity to ask ourselves whether we are truly willing to heed God's call to change our lives. But at the moment, that is the latest from Rome, and of course we'll have more as soon as we get it. But for just now, it's Colm Flynn for EWTN News Nightly.
Okay, thank you, Colin, for that. Back here in the United States, the Trump administration's cost-cutting measures are generating a lot of questions. As we told you yesterday, federal workers recently received an email asking them to list five things that they accomplished over the course of the week or potentially risk losing their jobs. This as the U.S. government's Human Resources Agency considers how to fulfill Elon Musk's demands. Federal workers, nearly 2.5 million of them, face conflicting directions on whether to respond. White House correspondent Owen Jensen has the latest. Owen.
Good evening, Tracy. Regarding the emails Elon Musk tweeted last night, and we'll put it up on the screen for you right now, subject to the discretion of the president, they will be given another chance. Failure to respond a second time will result in termination, end quote. Now, some departments push back, telling their employees they do not have to answer the questions. We asked presidential counselor Alina Haba earlier today for clarification. Take a listen.
Well, I think that there's reasoning behind that. You have to understand some of these departments, obviously, we work with top secret information that perhaps you're not supposed to disclose. There's a lot of complications that I'm not going to get into, but there's no question that every single cabinet member, every single person that was put into this administration wants the American people working, wants people back to work, wants to stop the Zoom calls, and wants to stop people from double dipping and having two jobs when taxpayer dollars are paying for you to come to work.
Is the White House investigating?
Haba also told us federal workers should not be confused. She says it's not hard to answer what you've done in the past week, but questions remain. And Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt was asked about the government cuts at today's White House briefing, including the deadline for workers to turn in their list of five things they have recently done.
And it's a very simple idea when you think about it. All the Office of Personnel Management is asking, all this administration is asking, President Trump is asking, is for federal workers who live off of the American taxpayers' dime to send five bullet points of what they have done in the previous week. That is all we are asking for. And so the Office of Personnel and Management sent out additional guidance last night. Those responses should be directed to agency leadership, and the president defers to his cabinet secretaries, who he's obviously entrusted, to pursue the guidance relative to their specific workforce.
Levitt told reporters more than 1 million federal workers have sent in their 5 bullet points. Meanwhile, in an effort to save money, DOGE has been canceling thousands of federal contracts. But many of those canceled contracts reportedly will not result in cost savings. Also, 21 civil service employees have resigned from DOGE out of protest. And tomorrow, Elon Musk will attend the cabinet meeting. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
All right, thank you, Owen. Well, tonight could be a big test for the Republican leaders in the U.S. House, especially Speaker Mike Johnson. A massive GOP budget bill is poised to hit the House floor. The stakes are high, and its passage is uncertain. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now with the latest on that. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. Yes, House Republicans are calling it one big, beautiful bill. It's essentially the framework of President Trump's agenda, from limiting taxes Americans pay to securing the border and spending more on defense. But several Republicans are still not on board. And Speaker Johnson says Democrats are now trying to derail this funding bill by limiting the president's ability to govern. He says that Democrats want assurances President Trump would not block any funding in the future approved by Congress.
It'd be, I think, a gross separation of powers violation and a terrible precedent for Congress to engage in. So that's a non-starter for us, and the Democrats know that.
He adds the current budget resolution is only an outline, and committees would decide the actual spending. Here's the framework of the GOP House bill. $4.5 trillion in tax cuts, bringing taxes to 2017 levels. $300 billion in additional spending for border security and defense. At least $1.5 trillion in spending cuts. Democrats say those spending cuts would include Head Start programs, SNAP, and Medicaid. But Republicans say Medicaid will not be touched.
The word Medicaid is not even in this bill. This bill doesn't even mention the word Medicaid a single time. And yet all Democrats are doing is lying about what's in the budget because they don't want to talk about the truth of what we're voting to start.
The public health insurance program covers 1 in 5 Americans, from low-income adults and children to seniors and people with disabilities. The lead Democrat on the budget committee says Republican numbers don't add up.
If Energy and Commerce Committee said we don't want to cut Medicaid, instead we will cut literally everything else we possibly can, 100%, that only gets you about halfway to the $880 billion. So by definition, they have to, as a minimum, cut hundreds of billions of dollars from Medicaid.
Here's the truth. This vote doesn't just open the door for Medicaid cuts. It guarantees them. Republicans are hiding because they're terrified of voting against Trump's endorsed budget.
Speaker Johnson does admit some changes to Medicaid must eventually take place due to fraud.
The estimate is, it's $50 billion a year in fraud alone in Medicaid. Those are precious taxpayer dollars.
It's important to note that Speaker Johnson can only lose one Republican vote, and so far at least 3 Republicans tell me that the spending cuts are not enough and that they plan to vote no. We have learned that President Trump has called each of those lawmakers. Bottom line, will a vote take place tonight? All Speaker Johnson is telling us right now is that there may be a vote tonight and there may not be, but it will happen this week. Right now, GOP leadership continues to whip up yes votes. At the Capitol, Eric Rosales, EWTN News Nightly.
President Trump says Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky may soon visit Washington to sign an agreement regarding rare earth minerals. The news comes as a finalized draft of the U.S.-Ukraine agreement has been presented to the Trump administration. A Ukrainian source says that it centers on a reconstruction fund for the war-torn country, leaving problematic issues like security guarantees for later. Meanwhile, Russian President Vladimir Putin says his country is open to economic cooperation with the United States on rare earth minerals and energy. Okay, now to the Middle East. Hamas says Israel is putting the Gaza ceasefire deal at risk by delaying the release of more than 600 Palestinian prisoners. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu demanded an end to the hostage handover ceremonies by Hamas, calling them humiliating. Hamas replied, saying that it is an excuse to evade Israel's obligations under the ceasefire agreement. Hamas further warned that it could lead to a resumption
of war. And back here to the United States, a close call at Midway International Airport in Chicago. All right, take a look at this shocking video. A Southwest airline jet about to land has to take off again in order to avoid a private jet. The airline says the flight did land safely. However, it is still unclear what led to the incident. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including taking charge. A former leader of the Church of England could face disciplinary action over past scandals. And the Vatican paves the way to sainthood for a military chaplain who died in the Korean War. A new details tonight in the case of the Catholic priest recently killed in Myanmar. Eyewitnesses say a group of 10 militiamen approached the priest and asked him to kneel in front of them. The 44-year-old said, quote, "I only kneel before God." Within seconds, he was being stabbed to death. Officials say they plan to punish the suspects to the fullest extent of the law. A former leader of the Church of England is facing potential disciplinary action over handling of sexual abuse allegations. The church's national safeguarding team says that it is seeking discipline against George Carey, the former Archbishop of Canterbury. The church published an independent report concluding serial abuse by a volunteer at Christian summer camps was known and not acted upon. The director of the safeguarding efforts says the church is taking the matter very seriously. Well, as the world prays for the health and recovery of the Holy Father, important work remains to be done at the Vatican. Today, the Holy See paved the way for several new saints. Among them is a U.S. military chaplain who died in the Korean War. Father Emil Capon is one of five servants of God who will be proclaimed venerable. The Kansas-born priest served his country in both World War II and Korea. In 1951, he died a prisoner of war. The others who advanced today include servant of God Salvo D'Acquisto, an Italian policeman during the Second World War, and Blessed Bartolo Longo, who was set to be canonized. A lawyer from Naples, Italy, initially hated the church. He later converted and, before his death in 1926, established the Shrine of the Holy Rosary at Pompeii. Well, here in the United States, it is the news about Father Capon that has struck the biggest chord. Father Capon was born in 1916 in Kansas. He was ordained in 1940 and was a chaplain in World War II and again with the U.S. Army in Korea. He was later captured and died as a prisoner of war. Today, the Vatican gave him the designation of Offering of Life, a category introduced by Pope Francis in 2017. The next step on the path to sainthood is beatification, which would happen with a confirmed miracle. And for more, we turn now to Scott Carter, coordinator for the cause for sainthood of Father Emil Capon. Scott, great to be with you today. A lot to discuss here, including the incredible story of how Father Capon's remains were found. But first, remind us again, for those who maybe are not familiar, who he was and why he is on the path to sainthood.
Yeah, thank you. Well, it's an exciting day to be here, exciting to share with everybody. Exciting not just here for us in Wichita, but from what I've seen, truly the church in the U.S. and even around the world nowadays. So we had a simple, humble farmer who grew up in Pilsen, Kansas, out on the plains, grew up with a great love for God, great desire to help others, and really a missionary call that, I think God answered. Called through the priesthood, the diocesan priesthood, and then into the military. And he really made a name for himself during the Korean War when his men were under attack. He was there about 3 weeks after the war started. And just from the get-go, he recognized that his men needed him to be out there, not just sitting back waiting for them to come to him, but really he needed to get out there on the front lines, go to the foxholes to pray with them, to bring them hope, joy, humor, a little sense of normalcy, and really our Lord's peace out there with him. And so, yeah, he had his pipe shot out of his mouth at one point during the war. He always had his pipe with him and received that many close calls, but he knew God wanted him to be out there. And eventually, when he had the chance to escape during a battle when they were overwhelmed, he chose to stay with his men and was captured and continued his service there in the prison camp for about 7 months. Before, unfortunately, he passed away just giving his life for the men. And that's what the Holy Father recognized today was how he spent himself in service to the men. And I think it's a beautiful witness to his legacy, which, yeah, continues on today.
Yeah, I mean, his is just an absolutely incredible story. And I understand that his remains were discovered 70 years after his death, in part because of a magazine article. What more can you tell us about this, Scott?
Yeah, so most of the prisoners of war who were with him assumed that he was buried in a mass grave there in the prison camp, kind of along the river. And the communists never let anybody, you know, go in to retrieve the remains from the mass graves. Long story short, just incredibly, by God's providence, the men who were burying him the day that he was buried said, the guards didn't go with us. And so they were able to actually give him a more dignified burial kind of behind a hut. And they put rocks and stones over his remains. And his remains actually ended up in U.S. custody in 1954, so shortly after the war ended. But they couldn't figure out who he was. There was about 800 men that they couldn't ID at the time. And it wasn't until advancements in DNA that finally in 2021, as you can see, his remains were returned to his family, which then brought them here to the cathedral in Wichita. And I mean, it's basically all of his skeletal remains. So it's such a blessing. I was able to go, you know, this morning over to our cathedral and just stop by the tomb. And while it was quiet, just say a great prayer of thanks and praise to God. And it's so touching to see people be able to come and pray at his tomb. It's just incredible.
Yeah, it really is wonderful and a great blessing. And Scott, really a blessing to be with you today. Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Absolutely.
All right, to learn more about the others honored by the Vatican today, including a one-time self-proclaimed Satanist, we turn now to Dr. Matthew Bunsen, Vice President and Editorial Director of EWTN News. Matthew, always great to be with you.
Great to be with you, especially on a day filled with such great news for us.
Absolutely. You know, let's talk about this. A former Satanist.
Yes.
And now on his way to sainthood. So how does that happen?
Blessed Bartolo Longo, who grew up, as you noted, right at the top of our conversation today with Scott, he grew up in the area of Naples in a very difficult time for Italy. It was called the process of the Risorgimento, the reunification of Italy. And he was drawn away from his Catholic family, his Catholic roots, by the Freemasons and then by the occult, which was very popular at that era. And with it came, of course, severe anti-Christianity, anti-Catholicism. He hated the church. And he eventually was drawn further and further into the occult and described himself as a satanic priest at one point. As invariably happens with those who travel down that road of the dark, of the occult, his life fell apart. His mental state fell apart. His spiritual state was deteriorating by the day. Mm-hmm. And he had a sudden burst of hope. And he turned to an old friend who sent him in the direction of a Dominican priest, who began this process of restoring his dignity, restoring his life, restoring any chance he had for holiness. And he went about a profound conversion. And one of the great tools for that was the rosary. And it was the rosary that really gave him that added strength to love the church again and to come back to the sacraments.
Yeah, what a great story. And let's talk about the rosary and also his shrine in Pompeii.
Well, that's right. So in 1873, having come back to the church and having really dedicated his life as a propagator of the rosary, John Paul II called him one of the apostles of the rosary. He came across a battered old church and wanted to restore it with the help of a great friend who eventually became his wife, La Contessa Mariana di Fusco. And the two of them spent years rebuilding this church, and then eventually it became so remarkable that they handed it over to the Vatican, basically. And it ultimately became a great basilica, the Basilica of Our Lady of the Rosary. And it's still there, and it's visited by millions of people every year, where, of course, Bartolo Longo himself is buried, was buried in 1926.
I want to talk about how he's relevant today, and also, you know, his story of kind of redemption and how that can apply to anyone.
Well, that's right. In an era in which so many are drawn to the occult now, to the false mysticism, to seances, to the New Age movement, Bartolo Longo, I think, stands as a real representative of, no matter how deep you seem to fall into this darkness, that there is always hope, that there is that opportunity for conversion, for repentance. And when we look at his life, he seems so far away from the sacraments, from hope. And yet here is somebody who, with the help of those around him, especially that Dominican priest, but especially the rosary, he came back to the faith. And as a member of the Order of the Holy Sepulchre, which I have the great privilege of being, he was given that honor of knighthood.
Wow.
And in fact is buried in the magnificent shrine in Pompeii in his knight's cloak. So no matter how bad it may seem in your life right now, turn to Our Lady, turn to the Rosary.
Mm-hmm. We always say that. Matthew, thank you so much for being here with us.
A great privilege to be with you.
Wonderful to be with you. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, the Supreme Court weighs in. The announcement makes it harder to communicate to women that abortion is not their only option. Plus, an author says his new book could bring more joy and meaning into your life. Welcome back. The Supreme Court declines to hear a case challenging so-called abortion buffer zone laws. The group Coalition Life petitioned the court last summer to strike down a buffer law in Illinois. The organization's founder and executive director says the ruling will make it harder to communicate to women across the country that abortion is not their only option. Well, finally tonight, a new book reveals how and why your life has meaning. The Postmodern Predicament by Catholic author Bobby Angel seeks to revive the joy of contemplating the good, true, and beautiful in the world with Christ at the center. In the book, Angel lays out some practical antidotes for overcoming social isolation and relativism. He also calls on readers to take courage as they have been created to live in these times. And joining us now is Bobby Angel, author of the new book, The Postmodern Predicament and a Roadmap for Recovery and Restoration. Bobby, great to see you. I know in your new book, you say society no longer encourages spending time pondering those big questions about life. Tell us why you say that.
There is a real sense of everything's been discovered. I can Google everything, therefore I don't need to learn or remember facts. I used to be a teacher, and I saw the decline of memory and attention, and it sucks us all in. And it's not just technology. It goes to something deeper, and I was blessed with a background in learning philosophy through my seminary training before I discerned that I was indeed called to marriage. I worked at an all-boys high school where I taught theology and philosophy to seniors, so trying to get 17- and 18-year-olds to ask these questions. Why am I here? What is a good life? How do I know what is true? Are more important than ever, but there is a real sense of these questions don't matter or they can never be answered. So it just leaves us pretty listless with a spirit of meh today.
Yeah, indeed. And I know your book goes over some really practical tips to overcome social isolation and relativism. Could you give us some examples of those?
Yeah, so and some of it is very common sense of just putting the technology down, getting outside, being with one another, loving your neighbors, like actually your neighbors, like talking to the people next door to you and sharing a meal or just asking how they're doing. These are little ways in which I can get out of myself. And surrounding ourselves with beauty, the time period we live in is the ideas that have seeped in, that life is meaningless, that the human person is nothing special. It comes out in our art, in our architecture. And so in little ways, to reclaim beauty around your home, whether that is with sacred artwork or being attentive to clutter or, and we have five kids all under 10. So keeping the house clean is pretty impossible. But there's a sense of like, I want them to see beautiful things and I want them to see more than just pop entertainment. And whether that is, that's painting, that's exposure to different classical songs or chants even of just like, broadening that, and even the struggle sometimes, because we have less attention span than a goldfish today, I believe. And so older movies or older pieces of music that require you to actually listen or breathe a bit, it sometimes we get restless, and that's okay. Like, but we can also stretch in that discomfort. And stretch when it comes to like going on a walk without a podcast or going on a walk without my phone, there's a bit of a die-off that could happen, a bit of an angst. And you realize you'll be okay. And maybe, in fact, that's what you need to be bored, to be alone in your thoughts, to be creative again.
Just a chance to breathe. Bobby, thank you so much for coming on and sharing this with us. We really appreciate it. And lastly, before I let you go, tell people where they can find your book.
You can go to sophiainstitute.com. You can also find Postmodern Predicament on Amazon. There will be an audiobook coming eventually, but it was a pleasure to write. I think it's pretty readable, and thank you for having me here.
Absolutely. Much needed, too, Bobby. Thank you so much. God bless.
God bless you.
And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.